Good morning. I know why adrenaline is the colour brown now, to be perfectly honest. Those that know me well in this room know that 15 minutes is a real problem for me. So it's, you know, why use one word when 10,000 will do? The Paisley Gathering was put in there. I'm sure it was as pointing a direction towards Scotland, but actually it was more appropriate to point Catherine Mulvey, actually, to get to the restaurant on Monday night that took about 2.5 hours to go 7 miles. Presentation today is really about trying to fit kindness into the future of CYC. The wee circle of people there is the people that we left at Loch Lomond side last night in a real act of kindness. This presentation, it's a bit like trying to nail jelly to a wall to talk about kindness. It's going to slip and slide a little, this one, and I'm trying to really sort of drill down and practice a wee bit and try and slot that in within 15 minutes. The programme that I come from is a small local authority programme in East Lothian called Lothian Villa. It has a sister programme about 6 miles away, which Phil in the front here is the manager of. And these two units in the authority, have tried to really work at relational approaches to childcare. Can I get a glass of water? I'll be in somewhere. So the programmes are very, very relationally orientated in their own right. And in many respects, they've tried to sort of like do that drilling down about what it is to actually be in direct relationships with troubled kids. At the start of my child and youth care career, it used to be a man with sort of big ideas, the big blue skies, you know, join everything up, it'll all work well. But the more and more that in actual fact that I work in the front line, the more and more I see that it's the tiny things, the small things that actually matter. And it's not big plans, it's tiny, tiny, tiny moments in life, the small things that seriously have a bearing on whether a kid feels connected, feel that they belong. And it really sort of batters home the sort of words of the lady up on the screen there, that it's tiny, small things that matter in child and youth care. Not the big things, but the small things. Grand plans are good, but tiny things really, really matter. And I want to try and use this presentation really as a way of looking at what the essence of our field actually is. And Nicholas Long really sort of touched on that, because kindness is a behaviour, but it's also driven by emotions of compassion, emotions of connection, and notions of love. Whether we like to frame the word love into our programmes, it's a frightening word because it's also being captured, unfortunately, by a child protection lens. But if we're really serious about relationships and we're really serious about attachment work, actually the word affection comes into that, and kindness and compassion are key components of doing that work. So I want to place kindness at the heart of what we're doing. And kindness sounds very sort of gooey, very, very sugary sweet, but I would say it's acts of kindness that are the core of healing. They're at the core of care, as Henry Mayer would have said. And these acts have so much meaning and taken from instinct, but they're now validated in neuroscience. And some of our journey in the next 5 to 10 years is going to be able to use neuroscience to understand that. And the kindness acts are actually now validated by the way that we're actually why we feel good in doing things that are actually kind in the first place. Because in compassion, we're closely linked to people. In compassion, we share another's pain and we wish them free of suffering. And as Hamilton advises, we're then motivated to help other people be kind as a result of that. And kindness has been a bit neglected in our field. But again, Nicholas Long sort of has hammered home the sort of message that we need to stop neglecting the notion of kindness, and we need to move it into understanding why it's important for us to do and use these small moments, small key moments in life that help kids move along. So at a time when we're considering the future, considering something so big, so huge, at the end of the day, something that is so small is so big. Something that's so old is actually very, very new in its own right. Some noted researchers in our field have been writing for years about kindness, long involved in the re-education movement in the US, Martin Brokenleg, Don Bosco in his schools in Italy and things like that, know that kindness is a trait favoured by workers and that can help troubled kids. Kindness is a source of energy in our field that connects us relationally and can develop trust with kids that we work with. In Scotland ourselves, some of our own people who have driven home messages about attachment work with troubled kids talks about the notion of actually drawing out the curiosity in working with kids, and the curiosity that actually is there about pondering why children do the things that they do, but children ponder about the things that we do, and one of the bridges between these two are tiny acts of kindness that actually locate you in relationship with another. And I think that one of the things I want to do with this is to try and get us a sense that these tiny acts of kindness can actually have an enormous impact on the relationships that actually develop. Martin Brokenleg, seminal in the reclaiming movement, indicated that in actual fact that when the recipient actually receives any act of generosity, that they wish to repeat that, they wish to give that back. And Leon Fulcher and Tom Garfat talked in 2008 about this notion of reciprocal kindness. This notion that in actual fact, acts of kindness that are given out over time come back to you over time. And that reciprocal kindness is the whole notion and essence of where the field should lie. Kindness is that source that develops trust, develops responsibility, develops connection, and develops belonging. I love this little image that's just about to come up here, and it reminded me so much of the first time I met Tom Garfat. Just wanted to say hi, and I'm not lying. The tiny moments that actually allow us to, the way that you first connect with a child, that moment of when you come in, which is a very, very frightening experience for a child into a residential programme. The notion of how that meaning is located and what the meaning of that experience is, because we can be sitting there with very big smiles on our faces and saying, you know, we're here to take care of you, we're here to protect you. For that child, the meaning of that experience might be, no, you're just my next jailer. So what happens in the interaction from when that child comes through your door and what they actually feel like when they receive small acts of kindness may create that, once again, that bridge. The emotional intelligence part that you use of yourself to actually give to another can change that whole line of fear from a child to enter into possible relationship with you. And Albert Einstein really indicates saying the value of the man resides in what he gives, not what he's capable of receiving. So how much are we able to give of ourselves in that relationship, and how much are we willing to put back to kids? So what is the road ahead? Acts of kindness find their way into the chemistry and structure of the brain. The validation within neuroscience about where acts of kindness actually fit in is that we know that oxytocin is released from the brain when you do an act of kindness. But it's interesting in where we also are starting to find that we locate oxytocin receptors throughout the body. So acts of kindness actually physically make you feel better. They aid your sleep. They aid your digestion. Now, if they have got these healing types of properties for individuals, there is also that they've discovered within the brain something called the vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is the kindness nerve that actually is the control, it's the valve for the release of the oxytocin. So we know that in actual fact, there is something hardwired in human beings to actually be kind. Because to be kind of each other, we had to group together in our evolution in order to survive. We survived together because probably we were relatively kind to each other. Might have been hostile to other people outside that, but most of the time we were trying to be kind to the ones around us. So if we're genetically wired to in actual fact be kind, then the brain is telling us something serious about what we equally need to do for the children who have actually found a real lack of kindness in their life. We need to be the models and the vehicles for delivering that. How much time have I got, Liam? Fine? Okay. Changing our brains through kindness, that again, pulling us back into the notion of neuroscience and what it's actually starting to tell us, that children who operate from their emotions, they feel things, and that determines so many of the ways that they actually act. If children are operating off of their survival mechanisms, the survival brain, and then they're trying to compile that and make sense of the world through the emotions that they're actually experiencing, they're not thinking in the logical way, because it's a process that's beyond their stage of development at that point in time. So how we are trying to change the brains of a child is in actual fact to create the kindness acts that create a different sense for the child about what the world is about, that it's a less hostile place, that it's a less challenging place in life. And I stole this actually from Tom Garth at CYC People page, but it actually was speaking volumes to me about what it means when a child's encountering adults. If they only feel that they've got limited alternatives, they can only make limited choices. It's us that actually have to provide the vehicle and model the vehicle that children can actually make alternative choices to the way they're behaving. To make the world less hostile needs to be shown that the world is less hostile, and we have to be the people that are practicing that and modelling that on a day-to-day basis. And going back to the notion of why that feels so good, there's an interesting study done by Harvard that actually talked about, they tracked people with alcoholism problems in the States, and it was a longitudinal study. And they found, interestingly, that those that were actually involved, alcoholics who wanted to remain dry, those that actually were involved in helping others to continue their recovery had a 20% greater chance of staying dry themselves. And those that actually weren't involved in assisting and supporting and being kind to others, they had that reduction in their chances of remaining dry. So there's something about what it makes in us about feeling good that helps us actually drive the acts of kindness further forward. And I go back to Don Bosco in terms of his notion. What do we know that children actually respond to? Kindness tempered with patience, an attractive trait. Rudeness, impatience, annoyance, hypersensitive, just as you were reporting there. Children pick that up massively, very, very quickly, in terms of that. Your words are saying something, but your actions are saying another. You know? So the last part of that, about the sense of an actual fact, that to be friendly, to be kind, to be charitable towards people was something that was of massive, massive value. And I'm going to finish there because I was very, very conscious I was going like that and to sort of move us on to questions. But it seems to me the most appropriate thing, that in actual fact of the old Chinese proverb that indicated you want happiness for an hour, take a nap. Could have done with that last night. If you want happiness for a day, go fishing. If you want happiness for a month, get married. If you want happiness for a year, inherit a fortune. If you want happiness for a lifetime, be kind to others. Thank you. And I did it within a minute, all right? And I'm going to sit down because I don't want your question.
When you're recruiting staff, do you have a kind of kindness meter that you can load over?
Restate the question for the speaker.
Sorry. When you're recruiting staff, the question from the floor is, when you were recruiting staff, do you have a kindness meter? No. I think that one of the reasons I wanted to raise this as a topic area is that maybe it is something we should be starting to teach. Maybe it is something when in colleges and universities that are looking at CYC work, that we should be looking at the notion of how do we teach kindness, or at least connect up that being kind has a direct physiological and emotional impact within kids. And maybe it's in the teaching of it. No, we don't have an actual kindness meter. But the goldfish bowl of CYC practice, your practice is seen by other practitioners day in, day out. It's seen by the kids day in, day out. The bottom line is kids know who's kind and who is not. Meanings and experiences are very, very subtle. It's okay to say that somebody belongs to a place and that you'll be safe and you'll stay here. If it doesn't do what it says on the tin, in other words, when the going gets a bit tough, are you going to be the people to kick out the kid for the exact same reason that they came into the place in the first place? So there's something about if you're saying that somebody's going to be going to belong in a service, then you have to act that, you have to demonstrate that, you have to ride through the storms with kids. And there's too many kids in our system in Scotland that have swum round the system. And, you know, they're too difficult for us to cope with. Maybe this programme's not suitable for them. At the end of the day, it becomes tangible in the day-to-day act. Are you going to hold on when times are tough? Are you going to see me through when times are hard? So it's within that type of context that it's done. Yeah.
Back to Laurel's major question, supplementary to that. Are there ways in which the children, young people in the residence contribute to that kindness meter? Because as you say, they can usually work it out faster than anybody else.
Yeah. I mean, I think that one of the things that's come to our attention is that how can we assist kids to volunteer? How can we assist staff to demonstrate the benefit of volunteering for things? And one of our 14-year-old girls at the moment was looking for a work experience placement. School was really toiling hard to keep her there. And both her and her key worker actually went out to get a time to get a work experience in an old person's home. The kid went there for a week, and in actual fact, the gifts that she had got inside, she was one of these people that clicked and connected with older people. She did her work experience. She got an incredible reference after a week, so much to the degree saying, we would like her to come back. She now does it, you know, 2 days a week. She goes in and gives 5-6 hours of her time, and therapeutically of so much more benefit than many, many other interventions that have gone on in her life that have just been resisted. She's benefited massively, and she's developed massively as a result of just showing these basic bits of kindness.
Well.
Yeah. And makes a heck of a lot of sense because they pick up the particles in the air.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Graham.
Max, I'm interested in the opposite of kindness and how you would challenge and counter unkindness that you might recognise in colleagues.
Again, the sort of goldfish bowl of practice is one of the areas that becomes a supervision issue. That I've met very, very few workers that come into their work that want to do a bad job. Lots of workers need to be guided towards how they can demonstrate this, because we have, particularly in Scotland, a culture of spare the rod, spoil the child, and punitive and coercive practices have been around for a long time. Shame to say that quite a lot of times that social work interventions are about riddled with you'll do what you're told. If that's the type of culture that sometimes we come from, sometimes that's the delivery that you give to kids. So it becomes an on-the-floor life space type of issue that you're actually helping workers to actually identify within themselves that this is not a good way to act to a kid. How is the child actually responding to them as a result of these experiences? And I think the more and more that you do that without supervision actually being an issue where you're battering somebody over the head with a stick, but it's the gentle encouragement of thinking about it in a different way that you can actually encourage workers to change their attitudes and their practices. And even more, it becomes that, that you, you locate their understanding in a different place. Sorry.
Do you have a way to train this? You go into organisations and you go in and have a kindness training program?
No, not at all.
How do you get it across that in the work?
Say again, sorry.
How do you get it across in the work? How do you promote this as a specific gift and skill set in child care work?
I think it's located once again in the sort of understanding part of your overall. How do you create a philosophy of care that, that locates it internally? That it's demonstrated, I think it has to be demonstrated from top down and bottom up, that, you know, everyone from your cook, your cleaner, your manager is actually involved in demonstrating that this is where and how this programme is actually going to work, because we know, not just by research, but by practice, this actually has a far, far better way of helping kids to heal than to tell them what you've got to do. I've met very, very few kids that do what adults want them to do. In fact, the only kids that actually respond to punishments in the first place are really the kids that actually want to please adults. Quite few kids that I've encountered actually want to please adults, you know. So it's not incumbent on them to change, it's incumbent on the programme to create the philosophy that allows staff to model and change and use kind behaviours within it. We haven't got any training programme to do that. I was raising more of the topic rather than in actual fact, you know, espousing that we do it in this way, really.
Do you think that we don't talk about it because of a natural assumption that we are being kind? So it's just a natural taking for granted that we're being kind. But sometimes what's up here, it's not coming out here.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Intentionality, you might intend it to be kind, but, you know, does it feel kind? Or does it feel oppressive? Does it feel as if that what you're doing is just punishing me? If it just feels that, it's unlikely to be any sort of agent of proper change. So, yeah, motivations might be very benign, but whether it actually translates that people experience it as kindness is a different thing.
What would you say about the notion that obviously the word cruel's got connotations, but having the cruel to be kind or tough love, or how does that stand up against what you're talking about just now, being kind on a day-to-day basis and every interaction? Sometimes it's not easy to do things for young people, but it is for their benefit.
Well, true to a degree, but in some ways if we're trying to teach responsibility in that as being the cruel to be kind type of bit, we have to equally model that responsibility, don't we? And if that's not modelled, if that's incongruent to a child, then they're not going to be taught that lesson. Or at best, they will do it for the short time that you're in their view, and then when they're out of your view, they will do exactly the opposite. So it's more located within that, I would say.
Okay. Thank you very much.